Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
September 8, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And guess what? This is the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you're hearing me say what I'm saying. Thursday. So, here we go. Mike Swanson is with us. WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. Plenty of stuff over there for you to explore, not just about Wall Street. Plenty of news and stuff like that. You know what? I have been in the midst of some weird things lately, and I check out Mike's emails. You should sign up over there for the emails. But also, he's the author of a couple of books I want to tell you about. The War State and Why the Vietnam War. Both of those books, you can see the images on Ocelli.com. You can see the images on WallStreetWindow.com, and I highly recommend both of them. Anyways, all that out of the way, we didn't talk to Mike last week. And I was looking forward to talking to him this week because, boy, it's been a strange week. And it's always good to talk to Mike. Anyway, how you doing tonight, Mike?
Oh, pretty good. Before you contacted me, said, am I ready? What I was doing was I was looking at Albert Lanier.
Okay.
I was watching. He's got a YouTube channel. If you type writer Albert Lanier, people can find it. But he's been a guest on your show. He's a freelance writer, reporter.
Right.
And he's got a bunch of videos about being a writer. So I was looking at some of his stuff. But that's not weird. That's good stuff. But it has definitely been a weird week. I mean, I saw a thing on, well, the Queen of England died.
Yes.
And now Prince Charles is king.
King Charles.
He is king. And honestly, the royal family of England isn't something I really have ever given much thought to. When I was a really small child, I remember, I don't remember how old I was. I mean, this is old, but I can't remember the exact year. But when he was getting married to Princess Diana, it was a television sensation. That I remember because the little, you know, as a child, the people, the girls or whatever I hung out with at that time, they were all obsessed with watching this. And that's the only real connection I have to the royal family. But
you're a touch younger than me, and you and I both remember that this
2 years younger.
Yeah, so this is a big deal at that time. It was, we're going to actually be able to see this live via satellite from the other side of the world. Remember that? It was a huge deal. And I'll tell you, I've never understood this. I know, and I had this conversation earlier today with somebody. They went, oh, wow, the Queen died. And I went, yes, so? You know, because to me, it's like, look, that's a monarchy. I got no use for the idea that people that are anointed by God are here to rule others. And I never understood that. And they go, oh, yeah, but you don't understand. You know, as a little girl, you want to be a princess and this and that. And I go, yeah, I know. And especially in our age group because of Princess Diana and getting married to Charles. And I know, but I don't get it. I never got it. There are people that they will plan, you know, their big event in life to go to England just to go and see Buckingham Palace, to try and catch a glimpse of the royal family, to, like, and they collect things. I mean, they have been a marketing sensation in the United States forever, and every news outlet.
If you forget about them as a royal family, look at the royal family of Saudi Arabia. They're absolute scum.
Of course.
You know. And then there's a royal family in Thailand, and people have rioted over things going on there in the past couple of years.
Yeah.
But the funny one of the odd, to make this all odd, I saw on Twitter that someone made a retweet, and it pointed out that today. Mm-hmm. Is the 100th year birthday of Lyndon LaRouche. Okay. He was born exactly 100 years ago. So the Queen of England has died on his birthday, his 100-year birthday. And you can go on YouTube right now and find a Lynn LaRouche marathon going on where they're just playing nonstop clips of his crazy speeches. That he's did over the years. And what he became most famous for was saying that the Queen of England was really behind the New World Order or whatever. He didn't use that phrase, but he said she was in charge of the global drug trade.
Right, right.
And basically everything bad that's happened in the United States, there's a lot of bad stuff that's happened in the United States,
right,
was orchestrated by England, that they are kind of like the, we talked about Robert Welch a couple weeks ago in the John Birch Society.
Right.
And in the 50s, they were talking about the communist conspiracy, basically, like Joseph McCarthy, the same sort of stuff. And all that kind of lost popularity it reached a peak in popularity really in 1961 and then died out.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of reinvented themselves and replaced the idea that there's a communist conspiracy with one that the Illuminati is the center. And they're just, communism is one of their tentacles. And what the LaRouche organization did is basically, say that it was the royal family that was the center of the conspiracy. So.
Well, and they're not without justification for pointing the dirty end of the stick at the royal family, the British royal family, especially because the British crown was responsible for a whole lot of action in opium wars across the planet. So here you go. There is a history there, right? And one could say, well, why would they ever stop if they were, the big player?
Well, empire is an ugly thing.
Of course it is. It always is. And we could talk about the, I'm always willing to talk about what I consider to be the American empire. That upsets some people, but it is what it is. When you have the military bases all over the place and all this, I mean, that's one thing. But no, the British royal family, look, there is a whole lot of and I'm not even an expert on it, but there's something to that. The LaRouche thing cracks me up to no end, though, because I remember we've had many conversations about this over the years, actually. And I remember trying to explain to you about how they accosted me outside of, like, post offices and stuff in New Jersey. In the whole impeach Obama, they were out there with the impeach Obama thing. And I think they're always trying to impeach somebody. They always want to sell you their books, and it's Lyndon LaRouche, who I don't know if he was most famous for really pushing the conspiracy theories or if he was most famous for, I don't know, running for president perpetually, or he was just, I don't know, he's just this wacky figure. And, how would you explain Lyndon LaRouche to somebody who never heard of him before? I mean, you're fascinated by him, I know that, because I can hear a giddiness when you talk about it.
It's like, well, yeah. He was that he was very active in Virginia in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
So, his organization. So, and I used to read, when I was a teenager, I was reading their periodicals.
Right.
I was reading, a lot of conspiracy literature I was just reading and reading different things. I was reading the Gary Allen books, which are really John Birch Society books. Mm-hmm. I was reading the Spotlight, which is, the Liberty Lobby publication.
Right.
You really can't get farther right than that.
That's true.
And then I was reading the LaRouche Organization magazine. But a lot of this stuff was just being placed in libraries where I live. So they had active members. The LaRouche Organization had a few people in the city where I live, still live now.
Right.
That were active members at the time. I think they passed away or they moved or something. But you know, back in around 1990, they were active.
Yeah, they didn't seem to be good at recruiting because, again, I saw that in Jersey where the local active members would really lobby hard to make sure to get certain literature in libraries, and they were largely responsible for getting some very good conspiracy literature into some libraries because without it,
What happened with them, a book came out about the LaRouche group, attacking it, you know, by a journalist around this time. And I remember reading that. And my dad was interested in them, or not necessarily interested in them, but familiar with them because when he worked in the Pentagon, he retired, but, you know, by the period I'm speaking of, but he had worked in the Pentagon for a couple years. He was 20 years in the military. And he worked in the Surgeon General's office for the U.S. Army, and the LaRouche organization was sending them their journals.
Right.
So they were making all these claims about, claiming that in the 1980s, they were claiming that AIDS was developed by the U.S. Army. So.
Right.
They're familiar with these people, but I don't know. I was listening. I found them on the internet,
okay.
And I listened to his speeches, and he just had a really eccentric way of talking. It just, I don't know. It was just kind of interesting to me, or entertaining, I guess. And when I went away to college, I went to Charlottesville, to University of Virginia. I did encounter a couple of LaRouche people there trying to recruit students.
Right.
And during that time, their spokesperson, there was a lady, Nancy Spanos. I'm probably butchering her name, but she was at that time appeared to be LaRouche's top lieutenant. She was his spokesperson. When I was watching these videos of LaRouche speaking, she would introduce him. Well, she ran for Senate. And interestingly enough, Jacob Hornberger ran in that race.
Okay.
For a Senator of Virginia, who you know, as a libertarian. And I didn't know Hornberger then. I know him now.
Right.
But I remember reading, you know, the articles about this Senate race. And I don't remember if there was a normal Democrat running against. It was a Republican named John Warner.
Okay.
that these people were running against, and I don't remember if there was a Democrat in that race or not, or she might have been running as a Democrat. But whatever happened, you know, Warner won. It's not the same Warner that's in there now.
Yeah.
But that's Mark Warner who's in there now. But John Warner was married to Elizabeth Taylor.
Okay.
But anyway, there is a, I've, over the years, I kind of off and on would follow what's going on in the LaRouche organization. And there's a website called LaRouche Continued.
Right.
It's all these ex-LaRouche people that post in there claiming it's a cult and they've left it, and they go, you know, these people were part of it in the 70s, and they tell you all these stories, or you can read the stories. I don't post in it. I was just reading it.
Right.
But when I was from the history of the organization, well, over when YouTube launched, 2006.
Yeah.
At some point in time, they started putting a lot of videos on YouTube and using it. And so that might have been going on for 10 years.
Right.
And I was regularly watching their videos because they would have one about one a week, and it would be LaRouche and three or four of his people like sitting around a table and talking. And they would all really, he's in his 80s. He died over 90 years old. He kept doing this till he passed away. And everyone would just defer to whatever he was saying. Like, he had a grip on these people.
Yeah, whether it made sense or not. That was
it. Yeah, whether it made sense or not. And then he would often just say some really crazy stuff is funny, you know.
Oh, no, that used to crack me up. I remember that very well because I discovered YouTube, you know. Okay, so YouTube used to be something that wasn't owned by Google. And it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, which we could talk about that too. But yeah. I was on it since before it was owned by Google. I was posting videos before YouTube bought it. And that's a whole other, some stuff I'm about to say about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I started in 08.
That's another conversation.
Yeah, it's okay. I started in 2008 on YouTube, right? So I don't remember if Google had bought it yet or they bought it right after that. I can't even remember now a time exactly when that time period was.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact. I'll look it up.
Yeah, go ahead and look it up because I remember when you, and I know what you're talking about. There were multiple LaRouche channels. And it was wild because YouTube also, there was a lot of like old TV shows and stuff on there that, you know, nobody was watching copyright. Everything in the world was going up on there. And it was really interesting. The idea, it's YouTube, you make it up.
Okay, they actually bought it in 2006.
Really?
But they didn't make, I don't think they made any changes to it for a couple years after that.
Well, okay. I don't remember it being public until like right after I started on there. So, you know, maybe it did happen, and I don't always keep track of every acquisition, but I do know it was an independently started thing.
And it was.
And it was just a sensation. There were a lot of independent, another thing is on there is there was just goofy videos like there is today, except of course that's evolved. There was like a lot of kids watching it because, there was tons and tons of like, remember that that stupid character that would go da ding 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 da ding da ding ding da ding da ding. Remember that thing on the internet?
What's that was a character?
Yeah, there was a character. Like I forget if it was a lizard or what it was, but whatever it was, there was a whole series of cartoons with that thing. The you know infamous cat playing the you know playing the organ. You know the
I remember that
the cat playing the keyboards. All these weird little shorts. That people were just doing wacky videos. All that stuff was up on there. And, I guess, I mean, they wanted to buy it right away. I guess they did. Because it wasn't around long. If you're telling me they acquired it in 2006, that seems weird to me. Because I thought they didn't acquire it for a couple of years. But at a certain point, they started asserting their, you know, their brand control over it. Maybe they let it grow organically. And then they started... Because initially there was no consideration of copyright. People played songs on there. Nobody, you know, actually people were complaining about intellectual properties and all that. Crazy Frog, somebody just brought it up in the chat room. It was a frog, not a lizard. Thank you. Crazy Frog, it was called.
Well, here's, I'm looking at the Wikipedia thing. It says they bought it in November 2006, but, I mean, they didn't really make any serious changes to it.
Right.
And it says that in 2014, they appointed a new, Google appointed a new CEO. And I think that's when they started to make all these changes. Like they didn't have the advertising on it, you know, for a couple of years. And then, and that's when it started to change. And then, it seemed like, well, let me put it this way. When I first got on it in 2006, I was fascinated by it. And I mean, people just don't think anything unusual about videos at all now. I mean, you see them all over the place.
Right.
But, you know, as I've told you before, I was someone that had a dial-up modem and had a crude bulletin board as a teenager I was running, you know, when I was in high school. You know, I had a phone line for it, so people could just dial in.
Well, I told you in 96, 97, I had a web TV. That's what I had. And that thing you plugged into a phone line and your TV. That was it. And it was slower than, I don't know what. I mean, you know, talk about molasses. It was slow. And yeah, I was on those message boards then. But, I recall this. What happened was I got divorced in 2005, right, from my first wife. And I ended up moving in with this girlfriend, had some kids, and they were just totally fixated on, like, just watching these ridiculous videos over and over again. I'm like, what in the hell is that? Oh, it's YouTube. And this is, like, 2006, like, early 2006, you know? And Crazy Frog was one of those things. And the guy from Australia in the chat room just reminded me what it was. That was that thing that used to go ding 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 ding. You remember that?
But I don't remember that. Okay. But what happened was
look that up after the show. Sorry.
Yeah, I forget these people's. Let me. Damn it. I was just thinking about this like a month ago, looking up some of these original YouTube people that I was watching.
Right.
And anyway, the internet. I went to a meeting. When I was still in high school,
right.
About the internet coming. This guy had a private computer company, and he was setting up his own company where you could dial into his thing and you'd be on the internet.
Right.
And I went to that, and I was just, I don't remember what year it was, but I was just blown away, you know. And so I was one of the first people where I lived to even be on the internet. And then I remember initially one of the things that fascinated people the first couple of years that they're on it was just going on and chatting with people.
Right.
With these chat, I think Yahoo added some sort of chat thing. There were multiple of them.
Well, AOL. And
I mean, I knew people that would.
Yeah, AOL and Yahoo, they had chat rooms.
And people, and people would chat for hours. Look, I know somebody some people met, you know, got married from meeting people in these things.
Yeah, you're talking to one of them. That's the thing. My first wife, I met in one of those chat rooms. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a tale of caution. I met in one of those chat rooms in, 97. And I had a girlfriend just before that who had died in 97, but she was starting up one of those companies too. Her little thing was called Hotspots or whatever. It was a little Jersey-based company. She had her server, and you could dial up to her server, and she was an internet service provider at that time. You know, and people were like, what the hell is this? Nobody's going to pay to go on a computer network. And it was very interesting to watch this stuff evolve. But, I met my first wife on one of those chat rooms. It was like for heavy metal fans or whatever. So,
okay.
You know, but you go into a chat room because it was based on an interest, although there were dating chat rooms as well that were meant to be for dating. But there was also just like you're interested in... one of the early ones that developed from a TV show was South Park, because I think they debuted in 97 or something like that. And like immediately they had a bunch of chat rooms that were devoted to people just talking about the show, in the chat rooms, right? So, you know, and they all had names, like they would all name themselves after characters. And in fact, my name on the chat rooms in the mid 90s was Stan Marsh 26 when I was 26, because I was a South Park idiot.
Ah.
But I also went on the JFK forums too, and those were on the US net or whatever it was, like the I can't remember, but it was like message boards mostly. And you could leave, after a little while they made it so you could leave files up on some of them. So we could literally share a picture or, you know, a frame from the Zapruder film or stuff like that, from our scans, and people got better scans, kept having to go to places like Kinko's or whatever to go make scans of your stuff, in order to, get the file, and then you could put the file up on the boards. You remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because nobody had a scanner in their house.
No.
But anyway. I'm sorry, I'm digressing.
All I'm trying to say is that, in 1999, I started my first website.
Right.
And it was a stock market website. And, you know, within 6 months, I started to sell a trading service.
Mm-hmm.
So I was one of the first, you know, I was early doing that. And so I'm trying to, what I'm trying to say is the point of this is I was very familiar and I felt like I was a pioneer with online media and the internet. And around 2004, 2000, for a couple of years there, I was consuming and reading lots of information about internet marketing, writing sales letters for my business, you know. And then 2006 came, and that moment I saw YouTube for the first time, I knew this was going to be the big thing, video on the internet. So I just got, you know, I spent a lot of time watching it the first year. And the experience of what YouTube was then is so much different than it is now. And I don't know, you know, in some ways that I was experiencing that it was a novelty. So like those people that got sucked into these chat rooms, when they first got on the internet, I was feeling that same excitement over YouTube. Because I knew, and I was right for a period of time, that if I could put videos on YouTube,
right,
I could make my business really grow.
Right.
Because in 2006, not many people were doing it. So that's what I did. I was one of the very first people doing videos about the stock market or investing. I mean, people did podcasts, but to put yourself in video, very few people were doing it back then. Within a few years, everyone was doing it. So that advantage I had went away. But the 2006 though, I went back and I was thinking about this, and some of the first YouTube people that I was actually following, because it was new to everybody. And there's one guy named Renetto, and you could tell, you know, it was like he was popular for a year or two, and he was older than me. And what he was doing was talking about basically the community of YouTube, mm-hmm. and then doing like gimmick videos. And then there's a guy that appeared. One thing about this is I went and looked, because I was thinking about these people like I said a month ago, and the number of views wasn't that big. They would get like 30,000 views a video. Now you go on there and that doesn't seem like anything. So the number of people that were actually watching it is much smaller than it is now. But when you would go to YouTube and load up the page, what you would be presented with were some of these people as being, these are the most viewed videos of the day. Mm. And you go to another page, like, these are the most viewed videos this week. So that's what they're promoting to you now. You know, they may have had categories like music and stuff like that. And very little of it was monitored or censored.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, you could bootleg stuff, I guess. But now, I mean, it's so algorithmic driven.
Right.
What you're presented with. I mean, you really, it's nothing like it was, but there was a guy to try to describe what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
There was a man, named Peter Oakley.
Okay.
And he went by the handle Geriatric 1927.
Okay.
Cause he was born in 1927. So he was an elderly man living in England, and he uploaded a video on YouTube, and he started out, you know, kind of saying something like, do I have this working right? Something like that. And people like said, keep doing it. You know, keep, we want to hear from you. And then he started a series called Telling It All. Okay. And all he was doing was sitting there and talking about his life story, you know, his experience being in England during World War II, growing up, you know, then, and just his different life stories. And he did this for several years and became a YouTube celebrity. He was on BBC. He came on a tour with the Alan Parsons Band.
Right, right.
And sang a song, you know, or they put him in a song or something.
Right.
So he was sort of a celebrity for a little while. And he had, I'm looking at the stats, he had 91,000 subscribers for a total of 11 million views. Well, now 91,000 subscribers, you know, isn't impressive.
Right.
There was just something about his videos that I like to watch. And,
well, again, the early days.
There's just something about it. Now, yeah. I don't think you could duplicate that.
No, because the early days of this, well, you can, but you got to do it differently, you know. I mean, there are people that, once they added the monetization aspect of it and they let, because at first they started putting commercials on there and nobody was getting paid for them, but then they started offering to creators in 2014 or whatever, like pretty much around the time that I launched the radio show, they were like, well, you know, you can get in on this. You have a Google AdSense account, right? Or whatever it was called at the time, your Google advertising account, which you can get paid if you put stuff up on your websites or whatever. And then they said, well, if you got a YouTube channel, you can attach it to that. So I did. And I mean, that has been nothing but a headache ever since for me. But I mean, for a little while there, people were getting paid and some people figured out how to do stuff so that they got, you know, huge amounts of views. I've talked about it on here over the years, these people that made like the toy videos and stuff.
Yeah.
Whole industries have been created out of the silliness of some of these video shorts. But it's evolved over time. And could you replicate it today? Yeah, you could, but you gotta have help from the algorithms.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are people that go out in there now and they instantly launch, get, you know, 500,000 subscribers. And they're doing, you know, silly things. I mean, not just the gamers, but I mean, there are people that just pull stunts in their house. You know what I mean? There's an entire video series by like some roommates and they just do things like fill the entire living room with balloons. And, go outside and shoot each other with water guns, but, you know, but like wild water guns, like cannons and stuff. And that's all they do is act like idiots on their YouTube channel. And they got, you know, kids watching over and over again. And, you know, it keeps hitting the advertiser feeder bar and boom, it works. they started to crack down, though, on controversial stuff a couple of years ago. And
right.
Once they did that, I mean, you know, that's why my channel's not monetized anymore. A lot of people I know have had their channels removed. I mean, Ed Opperman, you know who he is. He lost his channel not too long ago. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, it's a whole interesting topic for sure. Mike, I'm going to take a break.
Okay.
And let's come back and see where else we're going to go. I mean, we can continue to talk. We've done a few discussions on YouTube. Not a problem. We can keep going. I know you're currently exploring it for different reasons, but man, it is a strange new world in which we live. The Ocelli Effect with Mike Swanson will continue after this.
StreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell your listeners. I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around. I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. If it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles sort of really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Took the oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Chili.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah, that's the
problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And you know, some people would say that. Look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model too. And look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain, okay? Because people want to support you, they love you to death, but honestly,
so if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show, and I want you to do this too, because the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, but no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.
second segment of the Thursday Ocelli Effect with Mike Swanson. And I don't know what direction we're going to go in now. We wind up talking about YouTube again. And I got to say, it's an interesting landscape, always going into some of the history and some of the unique landscape that this thing added to the interwebs, if you will. But man, oh man, it's getting very, very strange. By the way, Mike, I don't know if you know this. My channel has 3 strikes on it right now, and it should be taken down. And they have not taken it down, last I looked. So, I don't know if I'm going to lose my YouTube channel. I should have.
Well, you get more from your podcatchers and stuff.
No, it really isn't going to affect the podcast numbers, but it does suck because it's less of a presence, because as soon as you disappear from YouTube, you know, you kind of drop in the Google searches altogether. So, and I know that because I lost my channel. They took it away, disappeared it a couple of years ago, remember? It was gone.
Well, I was downgraded from the Google search results.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago.
Right, right. No, a couple of years ago, they made a serious effort to sort of purge controversial stuff from the top of the search results. But if you lose your YouTube channel, it's a serious blow to how high up you show up on those pages.
Yeah, I can believe that.
You know, which, okay, I'll take that. I mean, you know, if you collect all the platforms that I'm on altogether, weird thing, by the way, I haven't even started putting stuff on Rockfin, but we're going to start next week, I think, the video channel thing. I got like 450 followers over there. I didn't put anything up yet. I just have a channel. So, you know,
whoa.
But all these different little platforms, I've got, you know, 100 here, 1,000 there, 1,000 there. There's a bunch of people that are subscribed to me all over the place. YouTube, even though it's like 6,000 subscribers, it never moves up. It doesn't do me any good, really. And my views, according to the public numbers, not very high. You know, but what are you going to do? And right now I haven't been able to upload lately, so this show isn't going to YouTube either. So, you know, but they crippled me for having one strike, and then I got another one, which means I'm suspended for longer. And now I got the third strike, and they should have taken down the channel and just have not done it yet. So I'm waiting on that. And my friend there that remembered Crazy Frog has been helping me set up the BitChute channel, actually. So I've got the BitChute channel now almost uploaded with a whole lot of material from YouTube already because of my friend Ray there. But other than that, my YouTube channel is probably going to disappear. Anyway, sorry. Again, I'm digressing into nonsense. But what is the point of all this, Mike? I mean, you're looking at the history of YouTube. You're looking at the history of the, you know, conspiracy culture that, you know, was really well intertwined with YouTube from its inception. Because that was the other thing that happened, is you had the wacky videos. You had people uploading their favorite TV show clips, right? Somehow recording those and putting them up on the platform. I don't even know how in the early days. And some other people started making videos that organically, you know, because it was like free TV all of a sudden. And there wasn't any ads on it to begin with, so it was a whole other different thing. And, but, you know, it's continued to evolve. So, why are you studying this so much?
I don't know.
You don't know? No, I'm just curious if you had a, like, you know, I got a reason for this. I have a master plan. I was just curious if you did, because it's interesting. And I see that you are still, you know, examining some of the stuff. And believe me, I'd love to know some of the secrets, because apparently if you do it right on there, which I never have, I guess, if you do it right on there.
I'm sorry. What did you ask? Why am I looking at what YouTube, how YouTube works, or?
Yeah, like how it works right now. I mean, why is it that you want to know? I mean, what is the advantage? I get it that it can benefit any business if you can get YouTube on your side. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I really got a prominent placement on YouTube, like I was a featured channel and I was allowed to do my thing and all that, I mean, I could get, you know, huge amounts of listeners. There are people, like I said, that end up with whole, you know, companies based on the fact that they used to just criticize movies. like one of the channels that I listen to all the time is CinemaSins, which they just sit there and they make snarky comments about movies and TV shows and stuff, right? They built a whole business out of that where they're just criticizing movies. And not even like a standard critique like you would get from, you know, like Siskel and Ebert or, you know, movie critics or whatever. But they have a whole thing they do where it's like they make fun of stuff and how ridiculous scripts are and, you know, and, boy, this is, certain things that happen. They go, well, that's racist. And, you know, they move on. And they do it all the time. And they started as one of these channels that nobody cared about. And then they just exploded. And now they've got like 20 people working, all of them with full-time jobs on there. They've split into, various channels, TV Sins, Commercial Sins, Music Video Sins, and of course Cinema Sins, still the main channel. And they're a whole big thing. They have even an online conference now where, you know, you get together, you pay money so you can be on Zoom calls with these guys who do this for a living. Okay. And I've watched that evolve, and I've watched a lot of these other people evolve, not just, and again, there's also people that just go on there and play games. Not just one game, but they try all new games, and the viewers tell them, oh, I want to watch you play, you know, the latest game from this company or whatever. And they do it. And they do that stuff on demand. I know Twitch is more the platform for that, but anyway, it's really interesting to watch how there's been a whole, like, industry, a whole business built into it in and of itself, but it's also beneficial to any business you have where you want to have great outreach to people. You want to be, you know, sort of a household name. If you can succeed on YouTube, you've got it. You know what I mean? Everybody uses YouTube. Go ahead.
Well, there's a woman. This is one of the funny things about the internet world, and I had a much bigger following than I do now when it comes to the stock market.
Right.
15 years ago than I do now. I mean, at one time I was in Los, I had a cab driver who knew who I was, you know, out of town once. But where I live, I'm looking at something that came up on YouTube. There's a woman, 20 miles away from where I live,
right,
that is a YouTube celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
She has video. She has 116,000 subscribers. She has videos getting 100,000 views on a regular basis.
Right.
And so I'm not really following her close enough to know, figure out what her plan is of this, you know, how she's going to try to make money off this. But what's funny about it is, I've noticed this, and I told a couple people about this where I live, and no one knows who she is. You know,
right?
so that's the kind of irony of it. She's a national YouTube celebrity, but locally, people don't know who she is.
Right.
And what she's doing is, her YouTube channel says "This Farm Wife." And she drives around, I don't know how much land they got, but they're doing farming, and, you know, she's talking about it in her videos and has a southern accent and an attractive woman, and, you know.
No, but there are people.
Gets a lot of views.
Yeah, no, there are people on there, they make jewelry. There are people on there that are like, you know, I'm just involved in this business or whatever, and I'm just going to show you what it's like, and they do that. And there are people with, funky names, like, what is one of the ones I heard from a couple of kids recently? Lanky Box, he calls himself, or something, right? Like, they have these weird names, some of them. Now, oddly enough, again, I wish I had listeners in Georgia. I don't. I've got very few listeners in Georgia, right? Nobody knows who I am if I go on the street or whatever. But there's other states in the union. I got a lot of listeners, right?
But my interest, I mean, I've always been interested in it. So you asked me, why am I following it now or something?
Yeah.
You know, like I said, for a couple of years, it really was helping my business,
right.
You know, grow or do well.
Right.
But now, I'm trying to change my website and make it more of a news website.
Right.
And there's a lot of changes I plan on making with that. But some of that I'm talking about local issues in the area I live in and some neighboring counties. And I've got like a planning document on different things I want to do. And, two or three months ago, I read some business book, and in that book, the guy has some giant insurance business, selling insurance. Right. And he's got all these agents under him, and he said that he deliberately created a YouTube following and became, you know, he's got a huge channel.
Right.
But did it not for the purpose of YouTube fame or YouTube money, but in order to sort of control any narrative that if people try to fight him or something.
Okay.
It's like a it's almost like an insulation. If you're a video star, is the way he's putting it, I guess, then it provides you some sort of insulation, like if people start to attack him for his business practices,
right,
then he's kind of got this insulation against it. And I read that and I thought, well, that's pretty smart, because I'd expect to be attacked from people, for the things I write. So that was one of the reasons. But then, as I started to do more experimenting with it, and I've been posting videos for years, but I started to pay more close attention to what's going on there. I've actually come to a conclusion that in the next year or two, it may, at least where I live, and I think other places, it may become, I think YouTube's going to change and become more useful on the local level, where it really isn't at all now.
Right.
So one of the things they've done is introduce these shorts, which are like TikTok videos. And my expectation is that in the next year or two, people will start posting those like they do on TikTok. And that could start to create a local, you know, videos that are local getting the algorithms pushing them and so forth. So one of my plans is to really, you know, I've already been doing it, but to do a lot on local news where I live. And now I'm thinking that YouTube is eventually going to be a place to be doing that. Locally, all the, you know, the reporters, the media outlets, they're almost solely focused on Facebook.
Right.
And none of them are doing anything on YouTube, at all, hardly at all.
Not yet.
And I think, not yet. And part of the reason why is because when people do post videos on local stuff, they don't get any views. So it looks terrible. You know, if you're a news outlet, you post your video and you get 10 views, it just looks awful.
Right.
But I think that's going to change. And so it's something I'm going to want to use for that in some way or another.
Well, local TV stations, like I told you, local TV stations are storing their videos on there. And they do tell you, go to our YouTube channel and you can keep up with this or that or the latest weather or whatever, you know, as like a supplemental, like when they have the storm thing going on, okay, we're going to go back to our regular programming, but you can keep up with us on YouTube. And they'll live stream on YouTube the weather. Weird stuff like that they're doing. And, What's interesting to me again is that it does work on the local level, but it doesn't stick. Like this is not you get very few views on your news clips or whatever, but they put them up there anyway. They are stored there, and even that's usually the source instead of even the media company's website for a local channel. And they do direct you there. I got a press release this week from YouTube, I think, about how they're they want to start focusing on podcasting, by the way. That's another thing they want to do. Along with these shorts. I mean, the shorts, I think, are meant to compete with TikTok.
Yeah, they are.
And that's what the deal is that every time there's something else going on, YouTube, you know, gets involved and then competes with it and then knocks it out. I mean, there's been various video platforms that YouTube just outdid. You know, there's been a bunch of them that have disappeared even. Like, I'm not sure why Daily Motion still exists.
Well, part of my interest too, is, frankly, is I don't like Facebook, you know, and I just don't like it. And I want to tell people, look, I don't care, you know, let these other people where I live, the other reporters or whatever, let them do Facebook. I'll do YouTube.
Yeah.
that's kind of that's part of my attitude. No,
but I hate Facebook. I so hate Facebook. I don't think you know how much I hate Facebook.
But I mean, my real goal is to make my thing a news website, not just a stock market thing. But you know, I'll tell you one little tidbit. You know, it's kind of the state things are in, I guess, but you know, if you go to my website, if someone goes to my website, you see at the top pretty much stock market articles. Then I've got something about, then three kind of topical things or something about Alex Jones. And then you'll see a few local stories. But, let's say in the past 24 hours, there's been 20 some stories posted on my site. Well, one of the stories that's gotten the most clicks. Which surprised me. I didn't think it would get any clicks. Is one titled, "Are You in Need of Food or Clothing in Rockingham County, North Carolina?"
Yeah. Well,
and,
because if there are a lot of people are. So
yeah, I mean, in what the story is, the Salvation Army is gonna hold an event there where you can apply to get food boxes and clothing vouchers.
Okay.
So I was just, you know, when I put that on there, and it's not a story I wrote. I'm copying and pasting a press release, but the problem with Rockingham County is just south of me, and I go there once or twice a week in that county, and there's no news. The county has 100,000 people in it. There's no newspaper in that county.
Well, that's it. So if you live there,
there's nothing.
Yeah, no, but if you live there and you've got problems, right, what are you going to do? You're going to go ahead and search. See, that's the thing. That's a practical search phrase. So.
Yeah.
You know, like, especially after a storm or something like that, like if somebody goes, need to find shelter, you know, if you have an article that's titled something about finding shelter and it's tied to their area, you're going to get all the hurricane refugees are going to click on your page. You know, it's going to happen, especially in a place where they don't have a local news outlet to go to. Like, again, I'm, you know, here in Macon. I had, you know, a recent thing where they did a feature on the bagel shop here or whatever in Forbes magazine, I think. And that got some national attention. But we have local news outlets. So if there is a storm, if the power's out, and I've got somebody who can, you know, go and look, okay, do we know what's going on? Is this a large area that's out, or is it just like our neighborhood or whatever? I can ask somebody to go on their phone. They'll encounter the local news outlets. Right? But if there is no local news outlet, then it's going to catch whatever has the right phrase. You know, so we might look for storm damage, Macon, Georgia. Now, you could have an article about storm damage in Macon, Georgia from 2 years ago, but I'll end up with that article in my feed. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the articles are going on those news apps, so that's where... You know, there's people on the news apps in this county, but there's no one serving them. They're getting news about bigger cities near them, basically.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes there's a story from a TV station, you know, in the region about their county, but there's no daily news. There's no newspaper. I mean, all I'm doing is, you know, I feel it's a public service. It reaches, you know, 1,000 people or whatnot read this, and they need this information. And, you know, I mean, the bad thing about the local news industry is that what gets the most clicks, is crime, you know, and I don't really want to do those stories. I don't. Very rarely do I do a story about the arrests and the crime, because I just, you know, think it's sensational. And
I know. And look, if you want
to, I just don't want to be about that. I mean, yeah. But I know I could. I mean, look, they're in the county next to me, one of the counties next to me.
Right.
They're wanting somebody. I mean, this is crazy, but someone has been molesting or raping, I don't even know what the right word is, dogs.
Okay. And, I didn't expect that.
I mean, I could do stories about that and probably 10, you know, hits across the whole country, you know.
Maybe.
But that's something happening, you know.
Wow. But I don't know if I'd want to post stories about that, but okay, yeah. Wow. Okay. Didn't expect it. You know, we're actually, you know, at your time here, but we can go as long as you want. But, cause I feel like we should not end on the dogs being molested story. If you don't mind, but, wow. Well, you also brought up something to me on a Facebook message where you knew somebody that was involved in a crime that was making some headlines nearby too. Right? There was some gun crime or whatever where you knew somebody was involved, didn't you?
Yeah, well, this happened in South Carolina at a beach. This girl I knew, she moved down there with somebody, and she's murdered. So
right. No, I wasn't,
she was working.
Yeah, go ahead.
Huh?
No, I wasn't even going to bring up the details. I was just going to say, you know, you knew about that. Do you want to report on it, you know? That's the question, and you can reveal as much as you want or not, but I'm just saying, it's just, you were like, yeah, I knew this girl, and I went, whoa, you know, do you want to print? See, that's a weird thing.
I don't want to write about it, but I want to tell you something about it.
Okay.
Connect it to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So, She was working in a cannabis store.
Okay.
And someone went in there and robbed it and shot her.
Right.
Well, you know, well, I don't know the details, but in most situations like that, the people that they're not planning to kill someone. They're not, you know, they just want to go in there and rob.
Right.
And, you know, someone walks into a convenience store with a gun, they're hoping it's just an implied threat. And they're using the gun to intimidate and threaten violence, but they don't really want to do it.
Well, that's why we always train for get them the hell out of there as fast as possible, give them whatever they want, don't resist them, you know, this kind of thing.
The thing about it is, you know, it doesn't always go right, so... You know, I'm assuming that's what happened in this situation, because that's usually the case. Well, the thing is, the whole world, we live in that situation thanks to, we've been living that way since World War II, with the nuclear, weapons that the United States has, and we are using them against the entire world.
Right.
In order to, you know, that's how we were able to go in Iraq. Go into Afghanistan, go into Panama, go into Vietnam, and all these other countries, without anyone saying that much about it. And now Putin is doing the same thing, with Ukraine. He has even said it, you know, when the war started, he's made statements about his willingness to use nuclear weapons, you know, if Russia was to, at some point, if it was necessary.
Well, and that's the whole point of why we keep hearing from North Korea, is because, you know, once a nation is a nuclear power, it's a whole other consideration as for whether, well, look, you're invading there, we'll invade you. they go, well, you know what? We got these weapons here. And,
but
I
was talking to someone a couple of days ago, you know, saying that, you know, it's possible that this person's a little bit younger than me. You know, me and you, we have memories of being afraid of nuclear war.
Right.
I think people a certain age younger than us don't. And I was telling him it's a possibility that it could happen. I mean, and then he said, well, I just don't see how anyone could do that. The leaders would have to be so crazy.
Right.
And I didn't really want to get into a big discussion about it. But just the story of this girl getting killed, well, that's how these things happen.
Exactly. Is that something that's adding in?
That's how these things happen.
Right.
You know, so, but this time it would be much bigger than one person. So this is a serious situation that the whole world is in because of this war. We just don't think about it. And it's kind of dropped off the news cycle.
Almost, yeah.
In the United States. And now Europe, I mean, they're going to, Russia has said they're not going to sell natural gas to Europe, and they're going through an energy crisis. So this is a ongoing thing that has no sign of ending anytime soon.
Right.
It's a bad situation for, I mean, to me, it's just a huge tragedy. And then I know you've spoken with, someone, in Ukraine that's really suffered from it.
A couple of people from over there, yeah. And as a matter of fact, again, I'm only in contact with one now out of a handful of guys that I used to be in contact with over there. So, you know, I don't even know what's happened to the really young guy who was both on Jack Blood Show and mine, Ruslan. I haven't heard from him or anything, you know. And he literally had friends in the Russian army, gave away their position to the Ukrainians, you know, because he's Ukrainian. And he was 20 years old, and nobody's heard from him now in a while. I don't know what's going on. Definitely, also more than one. One guy was lost for sure that I was in contact with, and I still don't have the details on exactly what happened. But yeah, people are really suffering. It is a real thing. It is a consideration, but it's also a larger situation that is going to involve all this stuff where there's going to be leverage and, well, we'll just put an embargo on you for this and we'll put a sanction on you for that. And these things will have real consequences. You know, they're still talking about it in other countries though, Mike, not so much in the U.S., but, one of the major considerations, right? With the changing of the prime minister in England, you know, cause not just the queen died, but, she had to, just bless, didn't she? The new prime minister. Anybody going to talk about that? That just happened and then she died? Okay. That's interesting. No?
Yeah.
They couldn't move her. Remember, that was the whole thing. The prime minister had to go to her where she was because of her health and then she died. Like, what, the day after? She approved the new prime minister because that's the way that works? That's an interesting story in and of itself, but one of the big considerations in the news, you know, politically in, the UK, is what? Well, Boris Johnson was a champion supporter of Ukraine in the conflict, right? Obviously, I mean, he wasn't removed from office for that. It was a whole bunch of scandals. But nevertheless, they're like, well, how is the UK's government going to change its position now with the new prime minister? That's still very much at the front of the considerations when it comes to that over there. Over here, we're talking about Biden and his MAGA Republican speech, right? We're doing that now. And, of course, American media is going to be obsessed with the death of the queen and Charles becoming king, which is where we started the show, Mike. So, you know, here we are. What's in the news cycle and what's actually happening on the planet might not be exactly the same thing, huh?
No, it isn't.
No, it isn't. Okay, Mike, have I worn you out now? Did I drive you nuts for like over an hour? Is that what the problem is?
No. It's so many. It's such a. I'm looking at headlines right now. It's such a mishmash of.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that's why I'm saying this. to you. It's a, Steve Bannon's been indicted.
Yeah, of course. There's that. Oh,
for his
yeah.
scam, for his border wall scam.
Oh,
and we got
the special,
you know, Trump and his. It is legal stuff going on.
Right. The special master has been, you know, there's going to be a special master to go over the documents. Donald Trump says
which
that
seems to be just a step to delay this as long as
of course
possible.
Is. Because
that's all, it, all that is.
Of course. That's all that is. Exactly. Let's put another layer
now,
of process.
Now, you've seen declassified files. You know, we've seen that we've looked at JFK files and talked about them on your show.
Sure.
And Trump has claimed he's declassified all this stuff. And if that's true, I want to see it. How come I can't see it?
Because he didn't actually look.
Because he's lying.
You can't just wave your hand and say, I said it's declassified. That's not how it works. You have to actually inform the agency that's in control of the information. And all that kind of stuff, because they need to know what they're working with as far as classifications go. The president
can change
it. Well,
I'm just saying, if it was declassified, we'd be able to read it right now.
Well, not necessarily, because how do you access these things? They're not in the National Archives' hands, so we don't have an access point for them. Right? So, you know, some of the arguments that have been made about this are interesting and could be viable, even on the Trump side, but it's very confusing. And it's not a simple cut and dry thing. Matter of fact, you know, I heard from this lawyer, on one of the shows recently that I was producing about, you know, well, what about the Presidential Records Act? And it's like, yeah, you guys are ignoring part of it and focusing, which is what a lawyer does. They focus on the part of the law that works in their favor, and they try and ignore the rest. Which is what both sides of this equation are doing. And at the end of the day, I think it's going to be a big nothing, by the way, Mike. You know, a big nothing that is absolutely pointless. It's just to keep people distracted and busy. And meanwhile, now you got another point of grievance. Trump gets to make, you know, raise more funds, rally the troops. And he's once again, you know, risen back up to prominence in the political discussion where he was falling off before the Mar-a-Lago raid. So, you know, it's just more of the same clown show. What are you going to do? Right? Mike?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what you're saying,
Just all of a sudden, I think I'm going to turn it over to you. You're like, not there. So I'm going, what happened? Okay. Anyways, I don't want to keep you too much longer or anything, but is there anything else you want to get to? Or
No, we'll see what's going. Hopefully nothing more crazy happens between now and the next time we talk next week.
Who knows? You know, because, look, there's also been, you know, more mass shootings. There was the mass stabbing in Canada, and both suspects are dead. I'm sure you saw that headline.
Yeah, I guess I'm asking for too much to say nothing crazy is going to happen.
Yeah, really. I mean, where are you living? Because it's always going to be crazy stuff, man. And that thing in Canada, did you look at that, by the way?
I mean, there's so many crazy things. That one I didn't read. I don't really know what happened. And I mean, there's something that happened in Memphis just yesterday.
Yeah, that's a shooting thing. And that's, you know, in like 3-4 spots or whatever. But the stabbing thing was these two people who have the same last name. And the one guy, I don't know, maybe took his own life. And then the other guy gets in custody and he's suddenly dead. And so both suspects are dead in this Canadian stabbing event, where there was like, I don't know, 14 or 15 victims and a couple of deaths or whatever, and they just went on a stabbing spree, these two guys, according to the official story. Pretty wild. I mean, we live in strange times, Mike. You got to...
Well, and then there's, in Las Vegas, there's a journalist that was stabbed to death by a county official, a city official.
Yeah, there's that. There's just... I mean, it's just the craziness does not end, Mike. What can I say? We live in a very strange time, and you want to cover news. I mean, locally, I don't know what it's going to be like for you, but Virginia is always a fascinating area, so, you know.
Well, it's crazy people here, too.
Of course it is, because you know what? You're on planet Earth, so crazy is factory installed. Comes with it. Anyway, Mike Swanson, WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. Hopefully he doesn't have the dog molestation story on there soon, but wow, I didn't expect that one, Mike. That was a curveball, but anyway, get his books, The War State and Why the Vietnam War, I especially recommend, but he's also got a cool history of Danville, Virginia, another book out there. The links to all this will be in with the show description. Mike Swanson, I'm going to talk to you next week, right?
Yeah, I'll be here.
Excellent. Who knows what the hell will happen by then. Meanwhile, the Ocelli Effect is done because I'm not going to fill Larry Hancock's slot. He should return within the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that. Everybody, I am Emilio Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.